Hey everyone, on today's episode, Jessica wants to negotiate a custom package for a wedding planner. Welcome to Aspire for More, How to Be an Everyday Negotiator. I'm your host, Joan Moon. When I tell people that I'm a negotiation coach, they immediately think about salaries, but negotiation is much broader than that. Everything is a negotiation. In this podcast series, we delve into the art and science of negotiation and the gender biases that seep through them. Whether you're aiming for a promotion, navigating a difficult conversation with a loved one, or simply seeking to be an informed consumer, join us as we discuss research-based strategies to improve your negotiation outcomes and build the agency you have in your life. So today's guest is Jessica. Hi, Jessica. Where are you calling from today?
Hi, I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
Okay, so Jessica from Washington, D.C., tell me about the negotiation that you have in mind.
So I think this is a little bit unconventional, but I'm getting married next year, and my fiance and I have decided that we want a wedding coordinator to help us just with some partial planning before our wedding, and then also deal with like all the coordination and things on the day of the wedding. We recently had a conversation with a wedding coordinator, and she was phenomenal. She had worked in the venue before. She clearly had a ton of experience with like doing weddings there and knew a lot of things that, frankly, we didn't even know about the space. And we were just like generally really impressed with like her level of organization, her energy, things like that, and like her general knowledge. But unfortunately, she quoted us $9,000 for her services when other wedding coordinators that we've talked to in the DC area have been more around like $6,000 or $7,000.
Oh, wow. That's a big difference.
Yeah. So like in some cases, she's like 50% more, which when we're trying to stay within budget is like actually a pretty big deal. And what I will say is like my fiance and I have already done a decent amount of work. So what she quoted us within the $9,000 included like several things already, like selecting a venue, selecting a caterer, some of those like big wedding vendors. And we've already done all that work. So like we want her services at the partial planning, I will say like level, but we don't necessarily need all of her services. So I guess our question for you is there any flexibility for us to negotiate with her down this price since we don't necessarily need all of the services that she's offering at the $9,000 price point? My fiance and I have gone back and forth on this, and I'm a little concerned about risking the relationship from two perspectives. So like one, I don't really want her to go dark because I actually quite like her and would love to go with her if she could offer like a cheaper package. And two, you know, I'm just worried that if I do engage in this negotiation with her, if she says, okay, you know, am I risking the relationship long term, seeing as how like she's the main point person planning my wedding? I will also caveat that my fiance, you know, thinks that this is not really worth the effort. The juice is not worth the squeeze and thinks we should just go with someone else because like, they were pretty decent. They weren't as good as this woman, but they were like within $6,000 to $7,000 budget. So anyways, yes, would just love your advice on how to approach this conversation and what's the best way to, you know, work with this wedding coordinator, hopefully.
Thank you for sharing. And what I'm hearing from you is a very relatable conundrum. If I engage in negotiating with this person, am I risking the relationship? I want to maintain a positive relationship, especially since you don't know this wedding coordinator well. It's not a long-term relationship, but she's going to be a big role in a very important day for you, right? So it feels very high stakes. You don't want her to say yes to something and then later on sort of resent like, oh, I did this work and then in worst case scenario, not do as good of a job on a day that you don't really get to do a redo. So what I'm hearing from you is it feels high stakes, it feels risky, but also you have some really legitimate reasons for wanting to negotiate. You've already put in what we call sweat equity into the planning of the wedding. So the first thing I want to say, and I say to a lot of my clients, is you know, as long as you are approaching it with intentionality and thoughtfulness and positive communication, we can always engage in a negotiation with minimal risk, to the relationship. She has autonomy, right? She's been doing this work. She's a businesswoman herself, and she knows how to say no to other people. And so what we want to do is, given that we don't have any data from past interactions with her that she might hold a resentment, or, you know, even if you've interacted with other people who say yes to things and then later on resent you for it, we don't have data that this particular wedding coordinator will operate in that way.
Right.
And so what we want to do is trust that she has her own autonomy and that she can communicate and say what she's comfortable with and what she isn't. And given that she is a wedding coordinator working with brides all the time, that she'll probably be able to communicate that really professionally and thoughtfully.
Yeah.
How does that sound?
That makes sense.
Okay. The second thing I want to address is what you said, like, well, how do I approach her in this conversation about negotiating? And I think the reasons that you gave are really legit. You've put in a lot of work. You've made these big decisions already. And so what you are asking for, and I want to be really clear here, you're asking for a custom package, not a discount. And what you're approaching is, hey, instead of saying, hey, can I get a discount from the $9,000 because I've done X, Y, and Z? What that does is psychologically that anchors us at a $9,000 price point. And then everything feels less than when you go down from the 9,000. So what I would recommend is say, hey, actually, the sort of standard package that you offer, it doesn't meet my needs. I was wondering if you would have a custom package that includes X, Y, and Z, and what that price point would be like. Would you consider price points around this range? And so framing it that way will present it to her less as they're asking me for a discount and more of like, they have a special request that doesn't fit my current menu of options. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that does make a lot of sense. So basically, if I were to say, oh, you know, the $9,000, it doesn't necessarily fit us right now, is there any possible way we could have a discount because I don't necessarily need XYZ services? She might think of it as like she's actually losing out and therefore be like less willing to engage in this negotiation moving forward. Versus if I said, if I can have a custom package, she might say like, oh, okay, we're like building something from the ground up. This is a potential client. Like she sees it as more of a win for herself than a loss in like what could have been.
Exactly. Exactly. And so approaching it differently might influence her receptivity to what you're requesting.
Okay. Got it. That makes a lot of sense. One of my, I guess like one of the things that I've been thinking about is I'm not really sure what kind of leverage I have in this situation. Like I think my perception, and maybe I do have some leverage and I don't know about it, but my perception is that she has all the leverage because I sought her out. I'm in need of her services. She's like delivering what she knows is likely an important day to us. So I think like during the interview, right? Like I told her I was pretty, which maybe this was my own fault, but I told her I was pretty impressed with her knowledge of the venue. She could like easily tell that. So like in what way do I have like sort of grounds to negotiate with her, I guess is the better way to ask that.
Yeah. So in this situation, what we want to do is signal what our alternatives are, right? Okay. And so you do have alternatives, right? But in your head, you were so blown away by this particular wedding coordinator that the other alternatives are like, they're ranked much lower. It's not like you have a really close second place in this scenario. Is that right?
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
So there are a couple of things that I would say to that. First is there's some psychological work you can do for yourself, right? You can remind yourself of actually, you know, wedding coordinator 2 and 3, they also had good energy and remind yourself of the positives of that, of those interactions.
Okay.
And I say that because when you feel like you are left with only one choice, you end up negotiating and performing as if you only have one choice.
Right.
People do not negotiate well when they feel like they're put in a corner. And so what you'll do is you'll actually end up, there's research around this, you will end up negotiating with her differently when you feel like you have other options.
Got it.
The second thing I would mention is that this is a bit of a two-level negotiation. You mentioned that your fiance was like, well, let's just go with one of the other ones and they're in the budget, right?
Yeah.
And so we call this a two-level negotiating because you're negotiating with him a little bit, even if it doesn't feel like, it's not like a tense conversation. You guys aren't arguing over it, but there is an agreement that needs to be made between the two of you. And you're also negotiating with her. In this situation, it actually works in your favor if you are to say, you know, it's really important that my fiance wants us to stay in budget. And the reason that this could be a very easy talking point for you is that women run the risk of being perceived more negatively when they are advocating for themselves. And when they're advocating for others, we don't have to worry about that gender bias coming into play. This is what the research shows. So what you can do is blame it on your fiance and say, hey, you know, my fiance really wants to stay in budget. I really want to work with you. Could we find a solution here? And so that is also going to increase the probability that she'll be a little bit more receptive to what you are requesting.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Is it worth it for me to approach her and like frame it as, I'm really interested in you. I really want to use you as our wedding coordinator. However, my fiance and I are at this impasse and he does not necessarily want to spend this much. Like, is there a way that you can help meet us in the middle or something like that?
Yeah. So my general recommendation for something like this would be to very subtly signal it. And it doesn't have to be like you're hitting her over the head with like, my fiance says no, like this isn't, if you don't bring your price down, then he's going to say no. It's gently, subtly signaling it can be incredibly effective.
Right. And should I start it off with saying that I was like, just sort of reiterating that I was impressed with her? Or do you feel like that will make her feel like I like her too much and that she has too much power?
I think there's actually zero harm in saying, hey, here are the three reasons why I want to work with you. You're recognizing her contributions, her skill set. And as long as you're not framing it in an overly enthusiastic way, then I think you're okay. And actually, by mentioning that, you're doing some relationship building with her. Do you have any other questions?
Yeah. So I guess one more question. Say I send an email, you know, I email according to what we've just talked about, and she comes back and says, no, we can't do a custom package. 9,000 is it. There's just like no movement or flexibility on her part.
Yeah.
Is that sort of the end of the line for me? Or I guess like I see two options. So like one, is this just the end of the line for me? Is there no way for me to like continue to negotiate with her because she has like very frankly said no? Two, if I am able in some way to like convince my fiance that this higher price point wedding coordinator is worth it and within our budget, you know, I guess like I have to work with her for the next year. So are things just like a little awkward because she knows that we really want to stay within budget? We were trying to negotiate her down, et cetera, et cetera.
What you want to consider is if you renegotiate with her, you don't want this to feel like it's, you know, haggling for a price, right?
Right.
Like it doesn't want to feel like haggling over price. Okay, you won't go down to 6,000, but will you do 7,000? We don't want this to be, you're not like shopping for a souvenir at
right.
in a tourist, you know, while you're being a tourist. So if you were to re-engage in a negotiation, what you want to do is present a valid reason for why the circumstances have changed. So at this point, given that you don't have a long-standing relationship with her, I would say it's best not to try and re-engage in a negotiation until you have some sort of external circumstance that has changed it and that would be valid in her eyes.
Okay.
So at this point, the likeliest way of moving forward is deciding with your fiance, okay, who's our other person? Or are we going to move things around in the budget so that we pay $9,000 for our wedding coordinator?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you do decide to do the latter, you don't have to worry about she's going to think that we were just haggling on price, and now I'm risking, you know, if I stay with her and pay full price, I'm risking something. What you want to do is, again, give her a valid reason. Say, listen, I talked to my fiance, and you can say things like, we decided to increase the wedding coordinator budget because I was so impressed with your work and I knew I wanted to go with you. Or you can say, we cut down on other places. Or so you can give other reasons for why your situation has changed, mm-hmm. and ask, we've decided to go forward with you. When you give these valid reasons,
yeah,
her reaction is less likely to be like, I can't believe they were haggling with me.
Right.
Instead, they'd be like, she'd be, one, flattered that you were so impressed with her that you changed your budget for this. And two, this is just work for her. So she says, okay, great, let's move forward. And so as long as you are building that relationship in every part of the negotiation by expressing like what you like about her and why you want to work with her, mm-hmm. you're decreasing the risk of it becoming a contentious situation.
Got it.
Does that like alleviate any of these fears that are coming up for you?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I guess I'll wait to see how she responds and then we'll move forward. And I actually have one more final question for you. Just
sure.
Not about this specifically, but I would say like more generally about mm-hmm. negotiations within this situation. So I think generally, the perception of brides is that they care a lot about their wedding, right? And that like the brides are the primary decision makers for, you know, selecting vendors, what the wedding should look like, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of these like wedding vendors very much know that. And so mm-hmm. I wonder if in this situation, like, am I at a loss at being like the bride negotiating versus potentially having the groom negotiate instead when they know that maybe like his level of not like interest, but his investment is maybe not as high as say like a bride's would be just based off of like regular standards and perception of the situation.
Yeah. So if you really wanted to invest and make the situation a little bit more complicated and you had your fiance coming in and negotiating with you, that's definitely going to change the dynamics and the chemistry of the negotiation. One, men do not have to deal with gender bias in a negotiation. So they can engage in slightly more like, quote, aggressive tactics. They can engage in slightly more like risky tactics, but the risk is lower for them than it is for women.
Got it.
Again, there's no like, I can't give you like a number, like there's a 30% chance versus a 60%. You know, I can't give you those numbers, but I will say that men engaging in negotiation are less likely to encounter that gender bias.
Okay.
But in every scenario, like what you're pointing out, there are certain norms or like stereotypical expectations.
Right.
For example, planning a wedding in a hetero couple, you have a sort of stereotype of the bride is making the decision.
Right.
And so anytime you steer away from the quote norm, mm-hmm. there is a risk analysis that you need to perform, which is exactly what you're doing by bringing up this question.
Okay. Got it. That makes sense.
So it's funny because you said I have a bit of an unconventional situation, but like this is a really important consumer choice that you're making. And I think your situation will be incredibly relatable to a lot of listeners. So I want to thank you for joining and please keep us updated on the situation. Best of luck with your wedding.
Absolutely. I'll keep you updated. Thank you.
Hi. If you're listening and you thought this episode was interesting or can think of a friend or loved one who could benefit from hearing this podcast, please share it with them. It would also be super helpful if you reviewed the podcast on whatever platform you're listening to, share it on social media, and tag @moonnegotiation. Thanks. Today's listener question is from Miriam from New York City. She asks, what can I expense on a work trip? So Miriam explains that she's traveling to Miami for a work trip and she's decided to stay an extra day. The company does not have a policy on how much to spend on flights, meals, hotels, etc. How much is she allowed to expense for work? She asks, what's an appropriate amount to spend on a work trip? And if I'm staying an extra day, how do I expense, let's say, dinner on my last night? So I think what Miriam is asking is if the work trip ends on a Friday and she was supposed to return on Friday night back to New York City, but she decided to stay in Miami until Saturday, is that Friday night dinner expensable because she was still there for work that day? This is a really great question, Miriam. And I think the lack of having a policy is requiring a lot of mental and emotional energy from you because you don't want to overspend. But you're questioning, what's the standard here? For those of you who tend to overthink these issues, my heart goes out to you. All right. These kinds of situations where it's really ambiguous, I would say it's important to reduce the ambiguity in this situation. Because in a negotiation, when there is ambiguity, women tend to get worse negotiation outcomes. So let's borrow that information, that research, and apply it to this situation. Reduce the amount of ambiguity by investigating. We do that in three ways. I call it APP, ask, people resources, and paper resources. The first one is to ask. You've already said that they don't have a policy, so you've done that. The next thing is to go into people resources and paper resources. I would start with a small circle, going to the people who you can rely on, the people who are the most likely to have the answers. So that might be your manager or the person who is reviewing and approving these expenses. And if there is no policy, you can ask, what's the typical range that you see when people submit their expense reports? What have you used in the past? And that could provide a little bit of a guideline. You start with a smaller circle and then you can broaden it. Let's say you're not comfortable asking your manager or the people who are reviewing and approving the expenses, then go broader to your coworkers and other people who have recently gone on a work trip. And if you need to go broader than that, you can talk to colleagues who are in similar industries or similar sized organizations. And you can ask them, how much have you expensed in the past, and use them to benchmark. The same goes with the paper resources. You can find a similar sized organization, an organization that is in a similar industry, and borrow the policy that they have. This is just to give you a general idea of what the range is going to be. Now, keeping in mind that work expenses are going to vary vastly, depending on whether you're in nonprofit versus government versus private. If I'm assuming that Miriam is not in government or contracting with the government because they tend to have pretty strict and clear guidelines on what is expensable and what is not. If you're in a nonprofit organization, the budget might be vastly smaller than, let's say, private in finance or consulting. And if you're in an organization with a lot of expense card culture, then there's probably going to be more guidelines. So I'm assuming that you're either at a pretty small organization or a new organization. So find an organization that's similar either to you in size or industry and borrow their guidelines. Once you've done that, I would recommend that you mention that when you send your expense report in. So in the email, you can say, since we don't have a policy, I borrowed from this and use these as guidelines. The point of doing that is to preempt a big response from the person who is approving the expenses and protect your relationship with that person. I get a lot of clients who would bring a question like this to me because they're so concerned about how they're going to be perceived. They're concerned about the person approving the expenses turning around and saying, "What were you thinking? Why did you spend so much? Why are you being so unreasonable?" The root of this question comes from that fear of being perceived this way, most often with my clients. So what I would say is you can preempt that kind of response by writing in the email that you borrowed a policy from another organization or you checked with a couple of colleagues. And even if what you spend is outside of the budget, they won't think you're being super unreasonable. They'll simply say, "Hey, unfortunately, that's outside of our budget. I understand that so-and-so organization might have a larger budget than us. Next time, try to find a more affordable hotel or try to spend less on breakfasts during the work trip." That's the most likely response you'll get if it is outside of the budget. Miriam, I hope this is helpful. Thank you for sending in your question. And if you're listening to this and you have a question, make sure to send it in on social or submit it to joan@moonnegotiation.com. I look forward to hearing your questions. you for tuning in to this episode of Aspire for More, How to Be an Everyday Negotiator. I hope you found valuable insights that will empower you in your own negotiation journey. Please keep in mind that this episode has been edited for brevity and is purely for educational purposes. It does not represent a full coaching session and should not be taken as tailored advice that applies to your unique circumstances. Remember, negotiation is not just about salary, although that is important. It's also about ensuring you're being treated fairly, creating mutually beneficial solutions, and strengthening relationships. Make sure you're following at Moon Negotiation on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and check out other services on our website, moonnegotiation.com. Stay tuned for more episodes where we continue to negotiate the everyday aspects of your life. And until next time, bye-bye.